Hello.
Yeah, hi. I'm looking for Tim McGavern, an executive at the Academy Awards. Is this him?
This is he. Who am I speaking with?
Mr. McGavern, this is Ethan Edinburgh of the Bad Science Podcast. I have a bone to pick with you, sir. I'm talking about Moana on this week's episode, and I realized by looking it up that Moana lost the Academy Award of Best Song, and that was clearly the best song, sir.
Yeah, tell you what, Ethan, I'll keep it brief. I got a merger meeting in five. You're not the first person to call about this Moana mishap.
Yeah, Moana Gate.
Moana Gate, if you will, is what it has been called. Listen, what's done is done. And Moana sure did go a far away, if you know what I mean, Ethan.
With all due respect, you are a scoundrel, sir. You are a rat bastard.
Tell you what, I'm sorry to have to cut this short, but you know, I have the La La Land soundtrack to play. Have fun watching your children's films.
Oh my God. Moana Gate is not over, sir. I will follow you everywhere that you go. You will be haunted by me and the Moana fans, the Moana army.
Goodbye.
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody. Grab some popcorn, some bunch of crunch, your lab coat, and a microscope. This is Bad Science. I'm your host, Ethan Edinburgh, and this is the show that breaks down the science of movies with a comedian and a scientist. Today, we are discussing Moana from 2016. Not that there is another Moana. I believe that's the only one. Anyways, I'm super pumped to talk about this movie. I absolutely love it. To help me break it down, I have two fantastic guests. The first is a Miami native, just like me, so whoop whoop, 305. She is a correspondent on the two-time Emmy-nominated show CBS Mission Unstoppable and host of Exploration Nature Knows Best on Fox. It's Dani Washington.
What's up? Great to be here. Thanks, Ethan.
Absolutely. Great to have you, Dani. Thanks for joining us. You double majored in marine science and biology, from what I understand, and you're an ocean advocate. So is it safe to say that the line where the sky meets the sea, it calls you?
It calls me every moment of the day. I love the ocean so much. And that's one of the reasons why I adore this movie, because I see myself in Moana throughout the entire film.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I see Moana in you. And coming from me, that should mean nothing.
I mean, you would have caught me if you had met me when I was like 8 or 9 years old. I swear, like, my parents would take me to the beach and I'd be talking to the ocean just like Moana did. Like, and I still to this day, I still do it.
Wow. Okay. So I have a lot of questions about that, including your mental health. But first, you are also the host of an upcoming Seeker podcast called The Genius Generation. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I am super stoked about it because we are interviewing young people under the age of 18 who have come up with some kind of discovery or innovation, a business that's changing the world, literally. Like, we've interviewed so many phenomenal young leaders who are, they'll blow you away. You listen to their story and what they know, and they're like talking about machine learning and how they invented and created this app that's going to help, you know, kids overcome depression, and looking at how we can prevent wildfires. Like, all of these amazing individuals that are our future. They are the future, and I'm so privileged to be able to interview them and talk to them and hear about their new ideas. Trust me, after getting through a year like this, listening to these people talk about the work that they're doing in the world under the age of 18, it's like, it'll blow you away.
Man, that sounds super fun. I mean, besides the entire whole science innovation part of it, which is fascinating, just kids in general must be so fun. I'm a huge fan of Kids Baking Championship. So if it's kids doing science inventions, like, that's the best of all worlds, in my opinion.
Very much so, yeah. And it's super futuristic too, and it gives you a glimpse into what this next generation, the Gen Zers, are thinking about and how they're interpreting all of these huge problems that we're facing. Literally, as humanity, we're facing these things, and they're tackling it head on. They're not afraid. They're not, you know, hesitating. It's like, okay, let's figure the solutions out and let's implement them, like, now. Wow. And they're all about it. I love it.
That sounds incredible. I cannot wait to listen to this podcast. And speaking about helping future generations, our other guest is a comedy musician, and he has great songs such as Shut the F Up and Put on Your Mask. He also played Jim and Andy in The Office, a musical parody. It's Tom McGovern.
Man, I knew I was going to come into this feeling underqualified in the company of someone like Dani. But after your intro, I was like, damn it. we have somebody that is an ocean science specialist cultivating young minds, and then we have a dude that makes TikToks in his girlfriend's parents' house.
That's perfect.
I feel lucky to be here.
Oh my gosh.
Well, we're lucky to have you, Tom. I'm a big fan. I see you putting stuff out all the time. I mean, your output is just like unbelievable. You're a mile a minute here. But I saw that you're also cooking up an indie feature called Duelers. Is that correct?
Yeah. So that's first of all, thank you. Likewise, I'm a big fan of everything you're doing too. And the Duelers we shot, it's already wrapped and it's in post right now. We shot it last January, and it's an indie film about a dueling piano bar. It's the last night at a dueling piano bar. It's about to close. It's about to be sold. And I play one of the dueling piano players. And I was lucky to draw from some real experience because that's how I made a living in New York for about 4 years before the pandemic came along. So it was cool. It's a lot of fun to work on. All the music in the movie is played live, and yeah, cool. I'm psyched to see it.
Yeah, that sounds super cool. And do you guys ever actually, in your experience, have you had actual duels with the people that you are duel pianoing? No. Do you guys get into it competitively?
Right. We find horses. We get jousts, shields.
Yes.
We take to the streets. Classic duel stuff. No, but you know, I'm lucky to say I've never gotten into an actual fight at a dueling piano bar. I'm one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, because I like the sound of it. I like the title, the concept, right. Dueling piano. Anytime that I've walked, because I used to, you know, play in cover bands in Boston and stuff, and then, you know, next door they would have like dueling pianos. I'd be like, oh, I'll go check this out. Yeah. But they always seem to be getting along.
Yeah, everyone has a good time. The number of times that somebody has come up to me and I've told them, yeah, I'm a dueling piano player. I'll be talking to a guy and I'll go, oh, so what are you guys, you fight each other up there or something?
Yeah, it's just the name. It's just the way the pianos look at each other,
right.
I guess. The pianos look like they're upset.
That sounds like a great episode of like WWE or something. They should incorporate that. Bring out some, you know, baby grands in the middle of the thing and like, boom, there it is. And then you go fight in the ring.
Right. Your best sonata and then go at it with a foldable chair.
Yeah, that's what all wrestling fans love too, classical piano.
That's what they want.
Okay, so we're talking about Moana, guys. She's bringing us together today. And I am curious to hear what you guys think. I mean, I'll give you my simple-minded schmuck take. I think the movie absolutely rules. I love it. I love the story, the setting. I love that there's no love story. I think the songs are unbelievable. I rewatched it yesterday. It was my second time watching it, and I watched it by myself, and I cried 3 times. So for me, this movie has absolutely everything.
Oh my gosh, I'm right there with you. I definitely cried again and again. Every time I see it, I do, because there are so many references to the ocean and like the love of the ocean, nature in general, like that really touches my heart every time. But I would say, the reviews regarding the cultural appropriation concepts in there, yes, I see it. There are a lot of different things. But what I love about this movie is that it changes the narrative about what a traditional Disney princess looks like and acts like. She's totally different than every other princess. She is a heroine. She's going after her dream. She's, you know, fighting for her people. And I really, really love that. But of course, they're going to get some things wrong culturally, because they didn't have a team of, you know, folks who are of Polynesian descent who could actually tell them the specifics. You know, they had The Rock on there. Okay, cool. That's part of his heritage. But like, who actually wrote the script? Who was there influencing the animations? Like, it wasn't an entire Polynesian team. So it makes sense that they kind of messed up a few things. Yeah. But I think it's a great introduction for people to just get a small taste of what Polynesian culture is like. And that it's also not a monolith, because we're talking about multiple islands all over the world, everywhere from, you know, Samoa all the way to New Zealand. There's a thread that goes through, but each culture is very, very different island to island.
Yeah, definitely. Tom, did you enjoy the film, or are you a Moana hater?
Yeah, no, I'm on the cry bus. Cried twice as soon as the grandma passes away, that really gets me, when she's like, I'll be with you always, wherever you go, along those lines, whatever she says.
Yeah.
I watched it also last night for the second time. I was with my girlfriend, and she's also a big fan of the movie. And before we even started, she was like, oh, I'm going to cry. I'm going to cry 4 times, guaranteed. And sure enough, we hit it. It's any kind of movie that deals with like parent losing a parent or losing a grandparent. That always hits me in the heart. And I think Moana does a really beautiful job dancing around that. Coco does the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I love it. You know what strikes me about Moana, at least the first thing that did when I saw it, and again, watching it, is the the animation, specifically the animation of the water, it's just stunning what they picked up and what they were able to do. It's like, it's unbelievable. Unreal. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
I think that's what I read actually took the longest, why the movie took a while to come out, because they were dealing with some new technology and CGI and like how they're animating it. And it was just like, oh, so much work, but worth it. When you see that, oh, that's how I imagine the ocean, you know, talking to me. And I was like, the waves are going to come at me. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That animation is unbelievably absurd. And I love that I'm the exact median of you and your girlfriend, Tom, that I cried three times. So it seems like the three of us would get along emotionally.
Yeah.
I think that maybe it's the music for me. Because I even cried before the grandmother falls ill. Just when she starts singing, I don't know. There's something wired into my brain when she starts singing about wanting to take on the ocean, that it's just, I couldn't even, I was shocked. I was like looking around. There was nobody with me, but I was kind of looking around like, is anybody else feeling like, why? This is a positive moment. And I have tears in my eyes. What is happening?
Yeah,
I'll tell you, when I had tears in my eyes, it was the moment when we saw baby Moana, you know, after listening to her grandmother's story and going out to the ocean and then seeing the sea turtle hatchling that she was helping get to the water, like, choke it up. Because I love sea turtles, by the way. They're one of my favorite ocean animals, and they are so interesting. And that whole story, just to peep into it, you know, 7 species around the world of sea turtles only. Okay, and all 7 are endangered. And the journey that those little hatchlings have to go through in order to survive to adulthood is like unbelievable. And the average, you know, without humans being involved at all, the average number of sea turtles that survive from a nest of, let's say, like 100 to 150 eggs usually is about 1. So 1 sea turtle will live to full adulthood from that nest. And so that like sparked a lot of things for me, because I've volunteered over the years helping with sea turtle nests, because I'm from Miami, and so are you, Ethan, you know. And every winter or midsummer, we have like nests that we need to protect, and you'll see that yellow white tape on the beach so that people don't trample on the nests. But like, it's they're one of the most badass animals in the ocean, because they survive so much.
I was gonna ask if we should be doing that, or if we should kind of let nature do its thing. Like, should we be out there protecting them, or is that kind of just natural selection? You know, they're going to die anyways because they're weak in the ocean.
I think we should be out there protecting them, because we as humans have already created so many other obstacles that they have to overcome in order to survive. I think it's the least we can do to at least assist in a bit and in a small way. There's no telling what happens after they leave that shoreline and they're out in the open ocean. We have no control over that, but at least we can control what we're able to, and that's along our coastline. We've added different factors like light pollution, where there's so much development along the beaches that sea turtles get confused when they come out of the nest. The hatchlings, they're, you know, innately they know to follow the moonlight. But now that we have buildings on land and they're bright lights, they think that's the moon. So they'll end up going that way and going inland instead of out to the ocean. So we've got that against them. We've got plastic debris everywhere that they think is food, which is not cool whatsoever, because it's not food. I wouldn't want to eat plastic. Do you want to eat plastic?
No, of course. Not like eating plastic, in my experience.
It sucks.
Yeah. It tastes, it's disgusting. So, you know, when you eat food that's been in plastic for too long, you got that little tinge of like that. I don't even want to get into the chemicals that are in plastic, but we can if you want to.
It's unhealthy, let's say.
Yeah.
It's very unhealthy. They're endocrine inhibitors. Hmm. They're disrupting our hormonal system in our bodies. That's what those chemicals are doing to us.
Man, anytime we have any sort of like marine-based film that we're discussing, I instantly get into this judgmental mode where I'm like, we are such primitive idiots.
Oh, yeah. We're messing up on the reg.
Big, like huge.
Yeah.
It's frustrating, you know, because I don't think that most humans are not intentionally trying to do these things to harm other living beings and to harm nature in general, but it's a byproduct of our behavior. And we make these choices every single day for our own convenience, and it ends up having this ripple effect that is not good. So to me, you know, as an ocean advocate, you can go down this rabbit hole of very depressing topics super quickly.
Sweet.
But I don't know if we want to do that. I would rather look at how we can solve these things and just do better. Nature is calling out to us and telling us, hey, I need y'all to get it together. Okay. Because if you don't, I'm going to keep going and you won't, because the earth will definitely go on without us if we choose that route. Humanity doesn't need to be here. the planet can survive on its own.
That is kind of comforting. Like, if we keep screwing it up, like, actually it's okay because the world will kind of take itself back. We just won't be around for it.
We won't be around for it. Exactly. And the ocean is resilient. It just needs time and space and obviously no plastic pollution.
Right. Yeah. Well, listen, I have questions on both sides of the spectrum. I have fun, positive questions too. But obviously when we're talking about the ocean, yeah, there's a lot that sucks pelotas, as people would say where I'm from.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docuspecial on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
So Maui, I was thinking about his character, that he's this shape-shifting demigod, okay? So are there ocean creatures that like reminds you of, that can shapeshift? Obviously, I doubt an octopus can like turn into a shark, but they can change colors and like, I know they can like squeeze through like super tiny things. So I don't know. I just wanted to like pose that to you if it reminded you of anything.
Yeah, I think that you took the words out of my mouth. I mean, for sure, as far as somewhat shapeshifting octopuses. Sorry, I always say that. Octopi is incorrect. It's octopuses.
Oh really?
I'm messing that up for my whole life.
And correcting people and sounding like a jackass.
Excuse me.
But yeah, they're so intelligent, and people underestimate these amazing animals. They are observant. They're able to change the texture of their skin. They have these pores that essentially change shape, so it allows them to change their color and then also change the texture of their skin so they can look like their surroundings and completely camouflage themselves, which is brilliant. Speaking of octopus, though, have you seen My Octopus Teacher? Just came out recently on Netflix.
No. Oh, what is that?
Okay. When we get off this interview, you guys need to go see this. It is an incredible documentary. It's not long, but it's about a underwater cinematographer who ends up building this friendship with a single octopus in the ocean off the coast of where he lives in South Africa. And like the documentary takes you through this whole process. Octopus will only live for about a year. They have a super short lifespan. But during that time, like, the process that they go through and just their daily living and how they interact with the other animals underwater. I mean, it's amazing. So you have to see it. To me, it's cool. Honestly my top movie of the entire year.
I don't think that I was aware that octopuses could develop. See, I almost said it. I almost said octopi. Like an idiot. I wasn't aware that they could develop relationships. I knew that they were intelligent, but I didn't know that they had the ability to actually bond with a human.
Yeah, you will be blown away by this and just the way that they told the story. And it was just in this small little area of the kelp forest right near the shore that he would go and just walk off the beach and swim out to and see her every day and watch the predator-prey interactions, because there are like some sharks there that like to eat her species and all that stuff. And it wasn't the movie wasn't about like just personifying an animal and making it more human-like. It was more about like admiring the beauty and the wonder of this very unique animal that most people kind of loathe or prefer to have it on their plate, you know, for dinner. Yeah. It's just bringing more life and more inspiration, I think, for people to see like how incredible the ocean is.
My Octopus Teacher on Netflix.
Yeah, that's the plug of the century. I would love octopus homie. That'd be ideal.
Right. Another fun fact about octopus is that they can taste with their tentacles. So, you know, they have 8 arms, and on each arm, they have hundreds of these little suction cups. Those little suction cups allow them, if they touch something with them, they can actually taste what it is.
Whoa. So wait, are they tasting stuff all the time, like by accident?
No, I mean, they're just in their own locomotion and moving through their habitat. They have to touch and move and hold on. And so they're able to taste things through their suction cups, the tentacles.
So you're like, most of their life is like them going like, ugh, rock, ugh, rock. Sand, ugh, coral, food. This is good.
Yes. They love to eat like crabs and shrimps and lobsters, lots of, you know, bottom dwelling crustaceans.
Today, I'm grateful that we can't do that. that we can't taste with our hands and feet.
Yeah. You got to be grateful for the little things.
Can you imagine? Touching? Oh, no. When you think about that doorknob that you're...
Yeah, I don't even want to think about that.
Yeah, that's a disease nightmare. So also I like that we kind of learned that there's a social bear trap that you can put into place by just saying octopuses. Like if you say that in a social setting, someone's gonna step on that, you know? Oh, somebody's gonna excuse me, that's not correct, Tom. It's octopi.
Well, I talked to a specialist about this on a podcast, so let me drop some.
Actually, you're wrong.
Yeah, you're wrong, sir.
Yeah, that's nice. Okay, so Moana's grandma has this big tattoo of a stingray or a manta ray. I'm not sure.
A manta ray,
thank you. And she says she's going to come back as a manta ray. She does come back as a manta ray. So naturally, my question for the two of you is, what will you be coming back as?
Bingo. I know what I'm going to be. I would definitely come back as an orca, a killer whale. They're
powerful,
intelligent animal in the ocean, in my opinion. They are obviously, they're cetaceans, so they're related to other whales and dolphins. And orca are actually not whales. They are considered a part of the dolphin family. And so they're toothed whales, and they're different than, let's say, a humpback or a blue whale or a bride's whale. They don't have baleen. Those other whales, they have this, like, almost like the bottom of a broom. That's how their mouth is structured, and that allows them to catch krill.
Baleen.
Yeah. And that's when you see
my daughter's name.
Feeding, they open. That's your daughter's
name. I don't have children.
Baleen. Soccer practice. 15 minutes.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, they open their mouths and they gulp this huge amount of water where, like, a school of krill or little, you know, small microorganisms are living, and they'll just sift it out. So they'll push the water out, but the krill stay inside of their mouths, and then they can swallow
filter
it.
Mouth.
Yeah. To me, it's insane how, like, some of the largest marine animals in the world eat some of the smallest marine animals their diet, and still can grow to that size. You know, the blue whale, the largest animal that has ever lived on planet Earth, even bigger than dinosaurs, and lives solely off of filter feeding and eating krill.
Wow.
Do you know, is there a specific reason why whales and other large sea creatures evolved that way to eat some of the smallest critters on the food chain?
Are they stupid?
Yeah. Are they dumb? Is that what I'm asking?
Yeah. Big food is fun.
No, they have huge brains. Huge. Right. And they have social and familial bonds, you know, with their own pods, and they stick together. They have languages, especially, like, going back to the orca. We have different pods around the world. So there's transient pods and resident pods. So the transients are the ones who, like, circumnavigate the world. They swim everywhere, thousands of miles. And then there's the resident pods, like, that we find in Puget Sound up near Washington State. And they live there their entire lifespan. And they just kind of hover in that area, have a very specific type of diet. That's how they live. And then within each pod, they have their own language. So how they communicate with each other is totally different. So if the pods meet, there's a language barrier that's there, which is super fascinating to me. But it's interesting with whales and dolphins. They are very selective in their meal choice. But to me, especially when it comes to, like, baleen whales and the fact that they feed on these tiny little, you know, krill and small fish, it shows me the full cycle of life and how nature is completely interdependent and connected. And so think of whales as, like, the farmers of the sea. So they eat this tiny stuff. They eat the little krill. They look like little mini shrimp. And they eat hundreds of thousands of them at a time. And then as soon as they digest that, they poop out hundreds of pounds of poop. And that poop fertilizes the next round of microorganisms that will grow. And so it's like this whole cycle. And then when the whale dies, a lot of times the whale carcass will sink to the bottom and will serve as food for all the benthic animals. So there's lots of, like, different types of lampreys and, like, other fish, crabs that all feed off of this whale carcass. And all that's left are the bones. And so it all just goes back hand in hand. And so we have to let that flow. We have to let that cycle continue. But there are, of course, other human factors that are inhibiting whales from living their best lives the way they're supposed to. Everything from, like, boat strikes, dealing with these massive tankers out in the open ocean that are crossing through migratory paths of whales and hitting them. And then eventually they die of internal bleeding. And then there's also, again, the damn plastic pollution, the marine debris. Certain species are eating it or getting entangled in it, and it shortens their lifespan, and they can live for a long time. Most whale species, they have, like, a similar lifespan to a human. So we have to do everything we can to make sure that they have the freedom and the ability to swim and live the way they're supposed to.
Interesting. I'm just spitballing. Strategy one, Okay, here we go. We become pirates. Hijack some of these boats that are crossing the whales' paths. Turn the boats around manually. Reroute their tracks. Now we're pirates. We use our pirate skills, collect plastic on our own accord, because we probably have ships now.
Yes. I like that strategy. In fact, if you haven't heard of this group, they're called Sea Shepherd, and they're very controversial. Not everybody likes them. Not everybody wants them around. They are considered the pirates of the modern day. And what they exactly what you just said. They go to all these places, these far remote areas of the ocean, and protect whales from whaling. And also they chase after illegal fishing boats too, and they will shut them down.
That's awesome.
Why don't people like them?
Well,
sometimes, you know, the strategies in which they go about doing that, some areas, you know, along the coast, people are fishing illegally because that's their only form of sustenance. That's the only way they're going to feed their families. And so when Sea Shepherd comes in and intervenes, it feels a bit like a form of, you know, colonialism, where it's like the white man comes in, takes over, and, you know, messes things up. So there's just a lack of communication there and relationship. I know that Sea Shepherd's intentions are really positive. They want to make sure we can protect what's left, and they're passionate. And guess what? They're also completely volunteer-based. Everyone who goes on these expeditions on these different vessels with Sea Shepherd, they are volunteering their time. So they'll spend like a year of their lives just on board this boat, trying to do the best that they can. You know, but at the same time, like I said, there are people out there who are just wanting to feed their families, and this is the only option they have. And so we have to figure out, how do we get them to create a sustainable way of living and providing for themselves, while at the same time not interfering with their own cultural practices and standards? So it's really very, very tricky way, you know, to have to deal with this. But I do commend Sea Shepherd for, you know, at least taking initiative to want to stop those who are out in the open ocean doing the wrong thing, because there are laws that were established, you know, by the UN and like all of these different conglomerates of different nations coming together saying, hey, we need to protect this because it's far more valuable alive than dead. For example, with sharks, you know, we're seeing 100 million sharks being slaughtered every year. One shark alone can provide millions of dollars of tourism revenue for a community, a coastal community, you know, over years of time, opposed to killing it for its fins, which that's been the case for the last decade or so. Huge demand for a shark fin, specifically in Asia, for a delicacy known as shark fin soup, where they kind of shred up the fins and put it into a pork or chicken broth. It's really just cartilage. So it's literally like, if the roles were reversed, we'd be like, the sharks would be getting us and just chopping off our ears and our nose and eating that and leaving the rest.
I mean,
really weird, right?
Yeah. No, you don't want that.
No, I'm good.
There's no need.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking, because I know that you said that you feel very connected to sea turtles and orcas and whatnot. For me, it's always been sharks ever since I was a kid. I've just been really sharks, and they're just fascinating creatures, and I think they're super, super misunderstood. And the reference that I always bring up in conversation when I tell somebody that I love sharks, and people are usually like, why? They're terrifying, obviously, right? There's a video that I saw, and I may be misquoting this, but there's footage of some sort of shark, like a black-tipped shark maybe, and there's a bunch of these sharks swimming around, and it's underscored by the Jaws theme, which is obviously, you know, you put the Jaws theme under anything, it's going to be terrifying. It builds suspense. Yep. They took the same footage and they underscored it with some sort of romantic string orchestra arrangement. And suddenly the footage that might have frightened you 6 seconds ago is this beautiful display of this complex, powerful creature. And it really is, and this is a bit of a soapbox moment, but I think it started with Jaws. I think Jaws really jammed up sharks' presence in pop culture and the popular representation of sharks in the media. And maybe that's why a lot of people, when they think of activism, they don't necessarily jump to, hey, let's help the sharks, because a lot of people that aren't necessarily passionate or educated when it comes to ocean conservation don't, you know, they don't jump to thinking about sharks as a cute creature that they want to save, you know? So it's interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jaws totally burnt this negative imagery of sharks into people's mind for generations. I mean, I talk to my parents and my grandparents, and to this day, they're like, no.
Yeah.
I'm not going in the ocean. My mom's side of the family is Jamaican. And like, we, you know, you live in an island and you don't want to go in and you don't swim. Like, what the hell? And it's really because of this fear, this really innate fear of like the unknown. Because when you're out in the water, that one scene with Jaws where he's coming up under that girl out of the depth is absolutely terrifying. But, you know, to this day, I had the privilege of seeing Peter Benchley, who was the author of the original book that was interpreted by Steven Spielberg into the movie. I saw him speak my last year at the University of Miami, and this was shortly before he passed away. And he honestly said, he was like, this one of my greatest regrets was ever writing that book, because he felt responsible for the plight of sharks. Whoa. And he spent the rest of his life, all the way up until his death, not only, you know, financially putting forward to help the conservation of sharks, but also being a vocal activist who wanted to make sure that sharks could survive through this period of time while we're here. And his wife now continues his legacy, and they're a huge proponent in the ocean conservation community for supporting projects and other conservation efforts. And I'm really grateful for that, because he saw the light. He saw afterward. He saw the ripple effect. And like, ah, goodness.
I'm piggybacking on that. I feel like it's probably better. I mean, this is coming from just my hollow brain, but I assume it's probably better to like focus on the ocean as a whole. Because if we, I don't know, I just don't have a lot of faith in humans, because if we like focus on one animal or another, we're probably like ignoring a species or hurting a species. You know, we only want to help like big, cute ones that we like, but I feel like the ocean as a whole is being like crapped on constantly. So,
yeah.
You know, are there things that we can do, I guess, to help all of them? Like, should we all just get over sushi and poke bowls?
That is a great question. And going back to your point about the cute animals, like we call them charismatic megafauna. It's all the stuff like whales and dolphins and manatees and, you know, all the squishy, cute stuff that we want to save. But yeah, every single living organism in the ocean is important and is a part of this very specific ecosystem and food chain. And we need every component. You know, we can't pull one out and say, oh, it'll keep going. No. Mm-mm. So to answer your question about seafood, I personally don't eat seafood because I know what the seafood industry does. And what's really deep about this is that it's not just about the fish either. You know, we have the open ocean where enforcement is really limited. People are not out there. The lifeguard, the Coast Guard, they're not out there like monitoring everything. I mean, maybe within the EEZ, which is the exclusive economic zone that every nation is entitled to, which is about 200 nautical miles from their land, you know, from the shoreline out into the open sea. But beyond those 200 miles, it's a free for all. And all kinds of things happen out there. There are people in, you know, along the coast of Southeast Asia that are being enslaved, that are taken on these fishing vessels, and they're captured, they're kidnapped. And they're not, how can they get home? They're stuck out in the open sea and they're just all kinds of terrible conditions. And so it's a human rights issue as well. And so we have to do something. And the only way we can help this situation, other than going out on a boat, like my friend Ian Urbina, who's an incredible author, New York Times bestselling author, he just came out with a book called Outlaw Ocean that describes, because he actually went and lived on these fishing vessels and got a firsthand account of what's been going on. You have to read it. But what you can do now, if you can't get on that fishing boat, is to stop eating seafood. Limit the amount of food that you eat. And also, if you have to eat it as a part of your diet, you know, and maybe what you need nutritionally, then make sure you buy sustainably caught seafood. And there are lots of different organizations out there, including MSC, which is the Marine Stewardship Council, I believe, and they certify where certain types of seafood come from. So when you go to the grocery store, look for that label. You can also go on the Seafood Watch app, which is, you know, created by the Monterey Bay Aquarium over in California. Yeah. And that outlines how good or bad a certain type of fish is. Because when you go to a restaurant and you order some seafood, you don't know where that seafood came from. And majority of fish and seafood that we eat in here in the US specifically, most of it, we have no idea where it came from. It was flash frozen somewhere. Could have been a year ago, could have been 6 months ago. Who knows? So that's why I choose not to eat seafood here in the US.
Awesome. Okay. Wow. So you're reverse pescatarian.
Yeah. I mean, right? Don't get me wrong. I love seafood. When I did eat it, I mean, it's my favorite. The fish are my friends and my food. I like, mm-hmm. It's good, but I do miss it. But I am willing to make that sacrifice because I want to see this shift. And like I said earlier, it's like we need to give the ocean time and space. It can regenerate itself. We just have to stop.
What about
things.
What you were saying? Like if you use the, what was it called? Sea Watch app?
Seafood Watch, yes.
Seafood Watch app. Like if you have the highest 100% grade, totally safe. This is what the fish wanted. It wrote in its will. You know, I want to be served with brown rice. Or is it still just like, no, I'm, you know, you're in it for the movement. You want people to just limit their intake.
Yes, I'm in it for the movement. And at this juncture, we're at a precipice where it's the point of no return. If we continue to eat the amount of seafood that we have been eating and are currently eating, you know, 90% of big fish stocks that we traditionally ate in the past are gone. They're gone.
Jeez.
So I'm talking about the tunas and all of those favorite, you know, favorite items that people love on their dinner mm-hmm. plate. They've been overfished.
We are the lava monsters of the real world.
Yeah, we literally are.
We are. Yeah, we're tech. What is it? Teka.
Teka.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom, crazy. Your name is actually really close to Te. It's like, so I don't know. I'm not blaming you specifically, yeah. but I mean, if you're eating seafood, it's something to think about.
No. I didn't want to come on here to admit this, but it seems like that's where we're headed. So yeah, that is, I am the cause of all of this damage worldwide, ocean-wide. Today I take a stand. My diet as of after this podcast recording, I'm going whey protein shakes.
Yep.
And peanut butter puffins. That's it.
I would actually recommend you should try out some pea plant protein.
I was going to say the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah. No more dairy. Because that's the other thing when it comes to diet. When you eat cattle, beef, livestock, that's also contributing to the health of the ocean negatively contributing because of all the greenhouse gases, the methane that these cows are releasing into the air, AKA their farts and burps. That's all contributing to climate change.
Danny, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I didn't bring you on this program to talk about poops and farts.
Well, now we've mentioned both.
I mean, Tom and I love to joke around, but this is immature stuff. Jesus.
No better way to get someone's attention than talk about poop and farts. I mean, that's true.
And it still makes me laugh. I can't help it.
It's never not going to be funny, I don't think. I've thought about it for a long time. I just like, am I going to be in my late 30s and am I still going to laugh at fart jokes? And I'm confident that I will.
Yeah, that's a good bet. Yeah. So yeah, you're saying that even eating meat, whether it's cows or I assume otherwise, is still contributing to ocean damage. We're still ruining the planet that way.
Yeah, because we're consuming so much of it. You know, we're eating millions, if not billions, of chickens every day. Cows, another, you know, astronomical number. And it's causing land depletion as well because we have to grow, you know, these animals have to grow somewhere. And the best route, the best solution that you could ever utilize is to become a plant-based. Doesn't mean you necessarily have to be vegan, but just eat things in moderation. You don't have to eat red meat every day. Maybe just go plant-based 5 days a week and then treat yourself. But
I mean, I would love to join you, Danny, but if I don't have my morning steak.
Everything's food.
Oh, you're one of those, huh? You like that morning beef.
I need my morning steak. It's like, it used to be coffee and I switched it.
Right. That 9 a.m. filet, medium rare, and then you can start the engines.
Yeah, exactly. Then I'm in a good mood. Then I can answer questions. No, I'm totally with you. That seems like the move. I'm going to be emailing Tom every day to make sure he's also on the track.
Right.
So I hope you're prepared for that.
Because I'm doing irreparable damage daily and it's time to change. Right. Yeah. Now.
Easy as 1, 2, 3. It's your choice. Every action that you take part in is having a ripple effect for sure.
Yeah. Frightening.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The break is over. Here we go back to the show about science.
This is another like real stupid question, but Moana at one point gets mad at the ocean and yells at it, "Fish pee in you all day."
That line.
Dude, that is my reading my mind. That was a question I had. I was like, I mean,
we're talking about poops and farts. So right. Let's throw pee in the mix.
Throw it in.
Is that true? Are fish peeing all day? And does that matter? I mean, I assume people pee in the ocean all the time too. Who cares?
Oh, for sure. Yes. We know it as urea. It's this, you know, it's the excrement that comes out of the fish after they've digested their food. And they are contributing to the chemistry of the ocean. The chemical composition of seawater is very unique and it changes in different parts of the ocean. You know, the salinity can be a little bit higher in certain places, lower in others. All of those things are keeping the ocean in balance. And like when you think about animals that grow their own shells, for example, you know, clams, oysters, even crabs and shrimp and lobster, they depend on the chemistry of the ocean to be at a stable place. If it's not, then things start to change. So for example, right now, we're seeing the chemistry of the ocean change because of the excess carbon. So we're putting all this carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. The ocean is and always has been the original carbon sink. That's where most of our exhales, everything goes back into the ocean. The ocean recycles it through the carbon cycle and allows these animals to build their shells and their exoskeletons and they can grow nice and strong. Now that we're putting so much more carbon out there, the ocean is at its carrying capacity and like it's now changing the chemistry of the water to become more acidic. So these animals are not able to properly grow their shells. What does that even mean? Well, all of the animals that I just mentioned are basically the foundation of most ocean, you know, food chains. And without them, the bigger animals can't eat, and it just moves up the chain. Whoa. So we need the ocean chemistry to stay in the right pH, the right level, the way it's supposed to be. But we can only do that by sequestering the extra carbon. And good news, ocean plants, marine plants like algae, for example, specifically kelp, one of the fastest growing plants on the planet, kelp and bamboo grow the fastest of any other plant. A foot a day, kelp. Growing a foot a day.
Wow. I wish I agree that tall.
12 inches. Yeah, right. And what do? They sequester carbon. They absorb that extra carbon and use it to build the plant tissue. So if we can start doing things like vertical ocean farming, where farmers or fishermen are transitioning from catching fish to actually growing kelp and serving it. It's the newest fad in New York. Before COVID, before lockdown, it was like chefs it was in high demand for seaweed noodles. So instead of using traditional, wheat-based noodles, you could actually use seaweed instead. And it's delicious. It's delicious. Ooh,
okay.
So any question for you? I'm about a 15-minute walk from the ocean right now. Will I be giving back to the ecosystem if every time that I need to use the bathroom, I walk to the ocean and do it there?
You know, I don't think I would recommend that.
I would.
I think you should
do that.
I think I might. I have Ethan's blessing. I'm just going to go be in the ocean from now for the rest of my life.
I think I'll just live a happier life knowing that you have to do that.
Yeah. And no matter what, rain, shine, I'm walking to use the restroom in the water.
And thinking that you're helping.
Right. My takeaway here is if I pee in the ocean, kelp's going to grow 1 to 2 feet every hour.
Yeah. And you can eat whatever you want because it's offsetting it.
Exactly.
Yeah. That would be interesting. Good luck to you because all kinds of things could happen if you do that.
No, I think that's great. Kelp helps. We need more kelp.
Right.
I feel like maybe I have eaten it and I don't remember because my memory is bad.
Well, you should watch the episode of Exploration Nature Knows Best that I hosted. I think it was season 2. And we went to meet one of these vertical ocean farmers up in Connecticut. And he took me on his boat and we went and harvested some of the kelp. And I ate it right there on the dock. It was delicious.
Cool.
It kind of tasted like salty asparagus or maybe a salty cucumber. It was yummy. And then you cook it.
It was delicious. No prep.
No prep. Straight from the ocean.
All right.
I'm a mermaid. So that's what I do.
You're a real mermaid.
Real life mermaid.
Real life.
The mocha mermaid, to be exact. Yes.
The mocha mermaid.
Yes.
Please tell me that's like an Instagram handle of yours.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's a whole lifestyle. It's a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle brand. Excuse me. Mocha mermaid. That's so good.
You ever start a band? That's your front woman name. Mocha mermaid and the kelp gang.
Yeah.
The kelp gang. Oh, I love it.
It's a bunch of brass. I would love to see them live.
Yeah.
Ocean themed background. Okay. I have so much work to do prepping for these shows. I wanted to ask about coconuts also. There's like heavy coconut theme stuff in this movie. And they're claiming in the song, I think it's the first song, they're claiming that like coconuts are all you need, basically. And so I was going to pose that to you. Like, are coconuts everything?
Coconuts are definitely important and very important to any island culture. I know, you know, my Caribbean heritage, we have coconut and everything, coconut milk, coconut water, like it's awesome. But come to find out, you know, coconut water, the nutrients that are in coconuts it's very nutritious. And I believe it was during World War II when we had a lot of soldiers, American soldiers who were stranded and injured overseas. They basically utilized coconut water to help reboot their system and help them gain their strength back because it's full of electrolytes.
Wow.
And it gives you like, similar to like eating a banana, you're going to get the same amount. I think it's delicious. Not everybody loves it. Another interesting thing that I'd read about, and this is kind of going back to the critique of the film of Moana, there is a bit of a derogatory notion with this because some certain, you know, Polynesian cultures in the past have basically experienced other people using coconuts as like a derogatory name. So that's why I was like, it was iffy that they had such a huge presence of, you know, coconuts in the film. I know that was one of the critiques. Well, but all in all, I would say, yes, coconuts are super important and they're so delicious. I love them.
Yeah, me too. Okay.
Oh, wait. I just realized something.
Oh, yeah.
Y'all didn't answer the question that you asked, Ethan. What animal would you come back as?
Right. Jesus Christ. Oh. Thank you for hosting this show.
That was 3 hours ago. That's awesome.
1000% correct. Tom, go ahead, man. What animal? Well, you kind of said you love sharks. So maybe I took that as an answer. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that was kind of a piggyback answer. It's got to be a shark. Specifically, it's got to be the hammerhead. The hammerhead is my favorite for a lot of reasons.
Yep.
I think it's the most, I was drawn to it just because it it doesn't look like, I guess, your typical shark. It's a very unique looking, obviously a unique looking shark with its literal hammerhead, which is called a cephalofoil.
Ew.
The hammerhead is the only thing that I really know a little bit about. I'm even scared to try to drop some facts in Danny's presence because I don't want to.
No, do
yeah,
it.
Please,
like, do
drop
it.
But yeah, I mean, the hammerhead is an amazing creature. It's it has, you know, the hammerhead is called a cephalofoil, and it's filled with these jelly-filled sensory organs called the ampullae of Lorenzini, and they essentially make the hammerhead, it's like a living metal detector. So when you look at a hammerhead swim, it swims in a way that its head kind of swivels back and forth, and they like to swim close to the ocean floor because they eat a lot of rays or skates. I'm not good at the difference between rays and skates. I still don't know. But they feast on those, and they find them by scanning across the ocean floor using the ampullae of Lorenzini to detect electrical pulses and temperature gradients. It also sounds like an Italian painter, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's such a cool fact. Yeah. And a lot of sharks have that that ability and that specific organ, you know, ampullae of Lorenzini. And when you see sharks kind of going to that weird shock phase, you ever seen that? They've shown it on Shark Week so many times where, like, someone will go to the back of the boat and grab the shark, the great white, by its snout and squeeze it, and it kind of, like, goes into shock. That's why, because they're super sensitive sensory organs. So,
right.
So cool. And they can sense a drop of blood in a square mile of water, which is
crazy.
Insane to me.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy. They're amazing, amazing, amazing critters. And I would definitely want to try a day as a hammerhead.
Okay. That's a great answer. Both of your answers were filled with fascinating facts. Mine will not be, I would say, a penguin is what comes to mind first. However, I hate the cold, so I can't see how that would be an enjoyable experience for me for, like, more than an hour.
But what an hour, Ethan. What an hour.
What an hour I would live before killing myself, before jumping off a mountain.
Would you be an emperor penguin? They're my favorite.
Yeah.
They're the ones who look like they have tuxedos on.
Yes, exactly. So I'm a huge fan. I mean, a huge fan of all penguins. But yes, if I had to choose one, of course, I would be the emperor because narcissism also. they're called emperors. But no, I would probably be, if I had to choose one, probably something with flight. Because, you know, even in this movie, watching Maui turn into a hawk and fly around, it's like, I don't know what's cooler than that. That's got to be the coolest experience. And it makes me just a little visit into the psycho world of my brain. I get mad looking at birds sometimes because of jealousy. I don't understand how we are so much more advanced than them. I have a VR headset, but I can't fly like this bird fly. And there's so many kinds of birds and they all fly. And I'm sitting here like, I gotta go to the airport. I gotta go through security. I gotta sit, you know what I mean? It's a pain in the ass for me to fly.
Yeah. True.
Really. It's true. It's true. But people always ask me, would you prefer to fly or be able to breathe underwater? And I for sure would go with breathing underwater, hands down.
Yeah. Yes. Your mermaid intuition definitely lends itself to that.
Definitely.
Makes a lot of sense.
Definitely.
Mocha Mermaid.
Mocha Mermaid.
Speaking of Mocha Mermaid, where can people find you online? Where can they keep up with you, Danny? I'm so sad that we have to wrap this up. I really feel like I could talk to you guys forever, but we do. And so where can people continue their Mocha Mermaid journeys?
Well, I am all over the internet. You can find me just for my name, Danny Washington, D-A-N-N-I Washington. That's my website too, DannyWashington.com. But also I have a nonprofit that I started 12 years ago here in Miami with my mom. We co-founded it together. It's called Big Blue and You. And it's all about inspiring the next generation of ocean leaders through science and media and art. So we host events for kids to basically get an introduction to the ocean and fall in love with it so that therefore later in life or right now at whatever age they are at, they can protect the ocean as well. Because if you love something, you will protect it. And so that's what we do. And we were continually creating programming. We're getting ready to launch some new virtual programming that I'm very excited about. So check out bigblueandyou.org and you can see some of the stuff that we've worked on in the past.
Awesome. Okay. Bigblueandyou.org. Tom and I, we got a collab on a ocean positivity song for these kids.
Yes, that would be great.
No problem. plus, I would just love that. And people should keep a lookout for The Genius Generation, an upcoming secret podcast of yours.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Coming in February 2021. Make sure you tune in. The Genius Generation is about to, like, blow you away. So please tune in.
Love that. Okay. Awesome. And Tom, where can people follow you? What's up?
Yes. Yeah. So anywhere on social media at TomMcGovern27, TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, just Tom McGovern. I'm trying to post as much dumb content, musical content as possible. I use dumb in a positive way. Also on Spotify as well, Tom McGovern on Spotify. And I'm getting into Twitch for the first time. So if you're a Twitch user, yes. I do songwriting streams where I'll take some suggestions from whoever's hanging out in the chat and I'll record and produce a song live on the stream. So
oh my Lord.
If that sounds fun, come hang out at Tom McGovern 27 on Twitch.
Wow. Okay. So follow Tom McGovern everywhere. He's the man. Hilarious. Good soul. A hammerhead soul.
Hammerhead soul.
right on. And thank you guys so much. This was so much fun. And I hope we can speak again about some sort of other oceanic film.
Yeah. Maybe Moana the series when it comes out next year.
Yeah. Moana the show.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Love it. Cool. Thank you both. And have a wonderful weekend.
Cool.
You too. Bye, guys. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Bye. Bad Science is a Seeker podcast produced by Emily Feld and me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our editor is Lucas Bollinger, and our social media is managed by Blue Whale Media. Shout out to EJ and Kate. And the executive Polynesian deucer, he's not Polynesian, is Brett Kushner. Oh, follow us on Instagram at BadSciencePod. If there's a movie you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, feel free to email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. And please leave us an iTunes review. Give us 5 stars. I sound like an Uber driver. But it does help. It makes sure people know about the podcast, which we really appreciate. Thanks for listening. Bye.